You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. Warning. Today's episode deals with brutality, including the death of a child, and as such, it may not be suitable for sensitive listeners. When visitors came, there was harmony in the commune of the Ant Hill Kids. Rock Terrio's wives served up a banquet of natural and organic food, and the large group of children were remarkably well-behaved. From the outside in, it appeared like a peaceful setup, a religious group living an alternative lifestyle. Although it was unusual, perhaps, the group was God-fearing and lived off the land. All the members chose to live there out of their own free will. But when their guests left, and their leader opened up his first bottle of booze for the night, everything changed. They feared his violent outbursts and did whatever was necessary to appease him. From experience, they knew not to try and escape. The ones who had tried to run away were ordered to break their own legs. One man was forced to chop off his wife's toes with an axe. And yet the members remained loyal to the men they called Pappy. They worked like slaves, and their food was rationed. But somehow they revered him. In a letter, one of his concubines wrote, "Hello, Pappy. I am writing about what you said on the subject of nutrition. It is very true that I nibble, a damnable fault which I will never again repeat. The thought of ingesting such a large quantity of food in so little time discouraged me, even if I work outside the entire day without eating. I ask you to forgive me, if it is stealing I did not realize. It is this fault that causes my plumpness. I do not want to be a fat and plump servant, that is too ugly next to a man that you are. I don't know what to think about everything and the meaning of my actions. I only know that I will not repeat them, and I don't speak lightly. I wish to be a true servant to you, my master. Alert, vigorous, with a clear and lively spirit, and well balanced to serve you every moment of my life. I have a long way to go. Thank you, Pappy. I love you. Hogla." As time went on, Rock Terrio's controlling behavior became more violent and sadistic, causing him to commit some of the most heinous crimes ever seen in the whole of Canada. Rock Terrio was born on May 16, 1947, in the Saguenay Valley of Quebec. He was the second of seven children to Hyacinthe and Pierrette Terrio, and the eldest son. His family moved to the Thetford Mine community in the Eastern Township when Rock was 6 years old. The town had one small local school, which only offered classes up to the seventh grade. Despite being described as full of promise and eager to learn, Rock went no further with his education, nor did any of his other siblings. Rock's mom was a devout member of the Catholic fascist group, Union d'Electeurs, or Union of Electors, who were also referred to as the White Berets, after their distinct mission uniform. Rock developed an intense hatred for the Catholic faith after attending Mass regularly as a boy, and being forced by his father to spread the gospel by going door-to-door to local residents. But it wasn't just Catholicism that he didn't like. Rock developed a distaste for organized religion as a whole. The best word to sum up Rock's childhood is uneventful. The Terrio family had a simple life in Thetford Mines, but as a teenager, Rock found a way to get more attention. Complaining about one's childhood was a surefire way to get sympathy. Rock described his father as being an abusive man, but Hyacinthe adamantly denied the accusation. Rock continued accusing his parents of all sorts of things, and it was clear that the young man craved attention. He chose certain topics of conversation, read up about it, and then gave the illusion of great intelligence. After he stopped attending school, Rock taught himself the Old Testament, and he began to fixate on the idea that the world was coming to an end. He converted to the Seventh-day Adventist Church and followed their rules stringently. This meant no smoking, no junk food, no alcohol, and no drugs. On November 11, 1967, Rock married Francine Grenier, a girl from a nearby town. Once married, the couple moved to Montreal and had two sons, Rock Sylvain and Francois. While living in Montreal, Rock developed ulcers, which led him to needing surgery. Due to complications, however, Rock was left with permanent discomfort. This also meant that he wasn't the happiest person to be around. Because of his health issues, Rock became obsessed with health and medicine. This is when he learned about human anatomy extensively, something that he would use later in life. 3 years after moving away, Rock moved his family back to Thetford Mines and began honing his woodworking skills. Rock used the fact that he needed to travel to sell his woodwork as an excuse to travel to Quebec City and get involved with women he met there. One of these women, Gisèle LaFrance, would become one of his first cult members. Woodwork sales didn't bring in enough cash to support his life back in Thetford Mines, and the local credit union took possession of Rock's house. After this, Francine parted ways, and Rock continued his relationship with Gisèle. At this point, he was no longer a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church after he was kicked out for attempting to take over leadership of the church. His magnetic personality and outspoken manner made others in the church uncomfortable, and he was asked to leave. By the mid-1970s, Rock's conviction of being a God-sent savior grew, and he began recruiting people to join his religious movement. He was a charismatic speaker and a charming man, so this came naturally to him. And with that, in 1977, the Ant Hill Kids was born. The initial members ranged in age from 18 to 24, and Rock himself was 30 at the time. His followers were Solange Bullard, Chantal Labrie, Francine Laflamme, Josie Pelletier, Jacques Fassette, Claude Ouellet, and Jacques Guiguier, and his partner, Maurice Grenier, together with their six-month-old baby girl. Rock Thériault's initial goal was harmless enough. He wanted to start a free-thinking commune where people would live freely and listen to his teachings. But it quickly morphed into a whole different beast. Rock banned his followers from having any contact with the outside world, including their families. The following months saw a steady decline in Rock's grip on reality, and he became convinced that the end of the world was near. February of 1979, to be exact. He preached to his followers that God had spoken to him and told him to prepare himself and his followers for the end of the world. This prompted Rock to move the group from Saint-Marie, Quebec, to a mountainside dubbed by Rock as Eternal Mountain. When he moved to Eternal Mountain, Rock had 17 members in his cult, 4 men, 9 women, and 4 children. While Rock relaxed and barely lifted a finger, the members of his cult set to work building an entire little town from scratch, like worker ants, which inspired the name of the cult, the Ant Hill Kids. A large communal cabin was the first to be built, with members working 17-hour days to clear the land and fetch supplies from the nearby town. Claude Ouellet and Jacques Fassette were tasked with digging a hole where the center of the cabin would fall in order to have a well. They chipped away at the ground for an entire summer before finally reaching the water table. Rock declared it a miracle. Food was scarce for the members. They only ate fruit and vegetables from their garden, and other food was heavily rationed. They were malnourished and weak, but they didn't dare complain. If they did, Rock would cut their rations even further. One mealtime, the pregnant Maurice Grenier ate 2 more pancakes than what had been allocated to her. Rock responded to this by punching her so severely in the side, he broke 2 of her ribs. Some members quickly grew tired of this treatment, like Yolanda Guinebert, who headed back to France claiming that her passport had expired. Another man, Leo-Marc Fauché, who had joined with his wife and child, packed up and left as well, despite having given Rock all of their money. Rock didn't try to stop them from leaving. Keep in mind, it was early days in the cult. This kind of behavior became taboo as time went on. In keeping with the new lives, Rock gave all the members new names from the Old Testament. He became Moise, or Moses, and commanded his followers to call him Pappy, and Giselle was Mammy. Many members still received welfare checks, which they shared with the group, providing a monthly income of $1,400 Canadian dollars. By September 1977, construction on Eternal Mountain was complete. The Ant Hill Kids' cabin was a simple, single room with a well in the middle. The roof consisted of moss-covered logs, and the rooms were meter-high partitions with bedsheets acting as curtains. They didn't need much more than that, though. The end of the world was approaching, and they were going to ride it out on Eternal Mountain. In November 1978, the world was shocked to learn about the Jonestown Massacre in Guyana. Rock showed particular interest in the unfolding events and claimed he had a vision of this happening the year prior. Of course, he had never mentioned such a vision to anyone. The Jonestown Massacre actually had an effect on the Ant Hill Kids as families of group members began trying to disrupt things for Rock. Authorities became aware of the commune, but they lacked any evidence that Rock was inflicting harm on anyone, so they weren't able to arrest him. Rock, however, volunteered to talk to police. He underwent a psychological evaluation and told them he wasn't the leader of the group. They were a democracy living peacefully, without promiscuity. But behind closed doors, that was not the case. Still, police had no evidence of Rock being dangerous. Sure, he was an oddball, but that was hardly grounds for arrest, and he was released without charge. Maurice Grenier became increasingly anxious and urged her husband to leave with her. Jacques informed their leader of his wife's wishes, and Rock instructed him to chop off one of Maurice's toes with an axe. When Jacques was reluctant, Rock taunted him. "What are you, a faggot? Don't you have any balls? If you want to be a man, you have to learn how to teach your woman a lesson." Rock then picked up the axe and raised it over Maurice's foot, threatening to cut off every single one of her toes. Jacques gave in and chopped off Maurice's pinky toe. After this, with Jacques being broken and molded into Rock's puppet, he became Rock's right-hand man. With the end of the world approaching, Rock became focused on increasing the size of his cult, so he declared all marriages, except his and Giselle's, null and void. He took it upon himself to marry all of the women in the commune, conducting the wedding ceremonies himself. As soon as they were married, he consummated the marriages and continued bedding his wives until they fell pregnant. In total, Rock fathered 26 children with the 9 female members of his cult. In February of 1979, the predicted apocalypse did not occur. But this didn't discourage Rock or his followers, though. Rock explained it away by saying there was a difference between the Roman Catholic calendar and the Israelite calendar, and that the end of the world was still coming. This was a good enough reason for his followers, much to the shock of their families. Parents of Chantal LaBrie obtained a court order to get psychiatric testing done of their daughter, but when police officers showed up at the commune, Rock denied them access. A month after the non-apocalypse, Quebec City's La Soleil published an article on the group titled, "They Are Happy and Free to Leave If They Wish." This piqued the interest of local law enforcement, and 10 police officers descended on the mountain in a helicopter a few days later. Rock was arrested for obstruction of justice and ordered by the court to undergo a psychological evaluation. Giselle played the role of dutiful wife during Rock's absence and kept up the morale of the group. Families of the cult members, who knew Rock had been removed, tried to visit during this time, but they were made to feel very unwelcome. Meanwhile, Rock was turning on his persuasive charm with the doctors. He told them that he had rescued many of his members from a life of drug and alcohol addiction and was helping to get them back on track. He offered them a place to live within a wholesome community. The hospital director even began calling Rock Moses and expressed his scorn for the public's unfair assumptions about the man who simply chose to live a different lifestyle. Rock was released from the hospital earlier than expected and was deemed fit to stand trial for his obstruction of justice charge, for which he received a 1-year suspended sentence. This saw a shift in the media's portrayal of Rock, with them suddenly painting him as a gentle mountain man who wanted to get away from the harsh side of modern society. To his followers, this only strengthened their belief that he was a good leader. Soon after this, Rock gave up his strict Adventist diet. He started eating meat, milk, cheese, and junk food again. He also began drinking again, after having been sober for 2 years. When he consumed alcohol, he forced everyone to gather around him and delivered drunken sermons for hours on end. If any of the members fell asleep, Rock would hit them over the head with a club. At the beginning of 1980, a new member joined the group. He was the first new member since 1977, a man named Guy Veer. Guy had been at the same hospital Rock attended, being treated for depression. He first heard about Rock on television and was drawn in by his story and his message, so he headed for Eternal Mountain. But he had to pass an examination of sorts before being invited to live with the Ant Hill kids. He wasn't permitted to live in the main cabin. His accommodation was a tool shed, where he was provided a wood stove, bottles of home-brewed beer, some chickens, and one meal a day. Guy was assigned the job of looking after the 3 children that were not Rock's, in addition to the usual chores like chopping wood and continuing the construction of Rock's wooden palace. The children Guy was to babysit were 2-year-old Samuel Guigier, 4-year-old Miriam Guigier, and 2-year-old Simon Ouellette, who came from Solange and Claude's short-lived marriage. At one stage, Terrio organized a party. 12-year-old Rock Jr. and 10-year-old Francois, from Rock's marriage to Francine, were invited to attend and were going to move into the commune permanently. Guy wasn't allowed to attend, however. He was to look after the outsider children. That night, something happened to little Samuel. The court records said the following. Samuel was crying and keeping Guy from sleeping, which made him mad. Guy lost his temper with the little boy and started to scream in his face, telling the boy to be quiet. When Samuel wouldn't stop crying, Guy picked him up by the throat and punched the young boy in the face several times. The following day, Rock supposedly found out what had happened. He called on Gabrielle, who is considered to be the nurse of the group, to take care of Samuel. The report claimed Samuel's head was floppy and his penis was swollen. Rock took a pair of scissors and lanced the boy's penis to let his urine flow out. Little Samuel was found deceased the following morning. According to a book written by Paul Kyla and Ross Laver, Giselle had a different version of events. She said Samuel's face was bruised on the morning of March 24th, but his head certainly wasn't flopping around. He wasn't in any serious trouble health-wise until Rock got involved. Rock irrationally decided that Samuel needed to be circumcised. In performing the circumcision, he used a razor that had been sterilized with alcohol. He also gave the boy the same solution to drink to act as an anesthetic. Samuel died the following day. His cause of death could have been complications from the circumcision or from alcohol poisoning. Maurice Grenier was informed about her son's death, but at this stage, she was so far under Rock's spell that she just went about her daily work. That night, Rock suggested they burn the young boy's remains, which his parents both agreed to. Claude Ouellette was the one in charge of burying him, and once it was complete, things went back to normal. Well, as normal as things could be in a mountainside commune under the rule of a sadistic leader. Towards the end of 1980, Rock's drinking was out of control. One night, he had a drunken argument with Guy and decided he needed to be punished for little Samuel's death. To make the punishment fair, Rock declared that Guy would stand trial for his actions. But not through the Canadian court system, no. The Ant Hill kids would have their own trial on Eternal Mountain. Samuel's father was the judge. Giselle was the prosecutor. Claude Ouellette was Guy's lawyer. Gabrielle was the coroner. And Rock's remaining 6 wives would be the jury. The proceedings lasted an hour before a verdict was reached. Not guilty by reason of insanity. The result did not satisfy Rock. After considering his options, he approached Jacques a few hours later and said that they should castrate Guy. Jacques was reluctant, but Rock issued another vote. This time, a jury of 10 was called upon, which included Rock's young son, Rock Jr. 3 of the 10 voted against the castration. The other 7 agreed that castration was a suitable punishment. Guy didn't plead his case during the whole ordeal. Instead, he opted to remain silent. Naturally, when the verdict was read, he was upset and protested. But shockingly, Rock was able to convince Guy to go along with it. Rock said Guy's headaches and his respiratory issues would be cured. Rock went on to explain the group structure. Guy was a slave, and if he was castrated, he would be promoted up a level. Guy then was asked to lie on the kitchen table, which doubled up as a slab for surgery, while Gabrielle fetched some medical equipment, an elastic band, a razor blade, a pair of tweezers, a magnifying glass, and ethanol. The operation was said to have been painless, and Guy recovered. He never did complain of another headache. Despite Rock's promises, Guy did not move up in the ranks of the cult. In fact, it was like he had been demoted, if that was even possible. Rock used Guy as his punching bag, bullying him and making the other followers do things to him, like trying to stab him in the chest with knives. Eventually, Guy managed to escape the Ant Hill Kids and traveled to the nearby village of St. Jogues. He began to tell the villagers about a child that had died after being kicked by a horse. Upon hearing this, police invaded the commune and arrested Rock and both of Samuel's parents. Police uncovered Samuel's remains, and members were quick to blame Guy for the boy's death. Authorities removed 7 children from the compound and placed them into foster care. Their parents were given the opportunity to regain custody of the children, only if they left the commune. All of the parents decided to give up their children and stay behind with Rock. A coroner examined Samuel's remains and concluded that his death was not accidental. Rock Thériault, Jacques Bouguer, Maurice Grenier, Gabrielle Lavallée, and Guy Vier were charged with being criminally negligent and causing bodily harm to the young boy. Claude Ouellette was charged with obstruction of justice for burning Samuel's remains. There was a string of other charges for other members, such as neglect of their own children. No one pleaded guilty to the charges. Jacques, Maurice, Claude, Solange, and Guy were released on the condition that they did not return to the cabin at Eternal Mountain. Rock was denied bail, as he was considered a danger to society. A 9-month trial ensued, and all charged members of the Ant Hill Kids were found guilty. Maurice and Solange were handed a 3-year probation. Jacques and Claude got 6 months in prison and 3 years probation. Guy was initially sentenced but later acquitted due to his mental issues and placed in Robert Gifford Hospital. Gabrielle was sentenced to 9 months in prison and 3 years probation. Rock was given 2 years in prison and 3 years probation. He was moved to Orsonville Detention Center in Quebec City. The members wanted to stay near Rock and managed to find 4 apartments in Quebec City. But what about Eternal Mountain? Well, police made sure to burn the cabin down and bulldoze what was left. At this point, it looked like the cult had imploded and everything had come to an end. But that was not the case. Rock Thériault was released in February 1984. His members, who had stayed loyal throughout his prison sentence, thought that they could all rent a house in the city together. But Rock had other plans, something he had planned while he was in prison. They would start over, build their commune up from the ground, somewhere else. The group traveled back to the wild and found a plot in Somerville Township, Burnt River. Somerville was close to the town of Lindsay in Victoria County, Ontario. Rock became sober while in prison and promised his followers that there would be no more violence. By May of that year, the group settled at Burnt River and began building their new home. Rock had a vision for their new commune, a 2-story A-frame cabin with a kitchen, a bakery, a maple sugar shack, a smokehouse, root cellar, and a stone altar where he could communicate with God. All of this was to be built by the remaining 2 men and 9 women, 4 of whom were heavily pregnant. They also had to mine the remaining 10 children, but Rock was unforgiving in his quest to have their new home built. People of Somerville occasionally visited the compound, but Rock made sure that the cult's dark side was never revealed to their guests. Locals were unaware of the group's history in Quebec, and they thought Rock and his friends were simply odd neighbors. Despite being a bit out there, they seemed hardworking and harmless. In Victoria, the Ant Hill Kids were considered an institution, not a family. This meant the group no longer received their welfare checks. To make up for this, Rock told his wives to start stealing from the local grocery store in Lindsay. They took meat, milk, vegetables, toilet paper, and just about everything else they wanted or needed. Their clothing was even altered, creating huge inner pockets to carry and hide shoplifted goods. Jacques Bouguer was caught shoplifting on January 31st, 1985, by a local police officer. Nearby, Gabrielle, Claude, Nicole Rule, and Rock Jr. were found waiting. Between the group of 5, a total of over $450 worth of items had been stolen. They were never formally charged, but they were banned from shopping in Lindsay ever again. Rock made his followers contact their parents for money. If they refused, it only served to further push the idea that they were unloving, unhelpful, hateful people. Desperate for money, the group sold baked goods and fruit, which soon provided a decent income. Rock saw the potential and created a company called the Ant Hill Kids. Rock's sobriety did not last very long. When he was bored, he would drink. And when he drank, he became an unforgiving sadist. He kept his followers physically and mentally weak, making them easy to control. One of Rock's new rules was that his followers weren't allowed to speak to fellow members without his permission. They were also not allowed to have sex without consulting him first. To up the ante, he introduced gladiator tournaments, where he would have members get into a dirt ring and fight each other. Sometimes the women were made to wrestle each other while naked to entertain Rock. He began to decline mentally and became convinced all of his followers wanted to defect. He picked a favorite wife for a while, causing distrust and jealousy among the others. This approach to divide and rule assured Rock he would always be the one in control. His followers would not band together to overthrow him. Over time, his methods became more sadistic. He no longer conducted beatings with belts, he used hammers instead. When Rock suspected someone wanted to leave, he had a particularly cruel way of punishing them. He would hang the person from a ceiling and pluck hairs from their body one by one. Then, he would defecate on them. He even convinced his followers to break their own legs with a sledgehammer to prove their loyalty to him and the cult. But it didn't stop there. Rock made his followers sit on lit stoves, shoot each other in the shoulders, and rub feces on one another. The children weren't exempt from this treatment either. They would often be stripped naked and beaten, and reportedly, if one of the children misbehaved, Rock would pin them up against a tree, nail their clothing to the trunk, and make the other children throw rocks at them. One evening, during a freezing Canadian winter, one mother was forced to leave her crying baby outside. Sadly, the infant succumbed to hypothermia. The death of that child led law enforcement to investigate the neglect of children of the cult. In 1987, 14 children were put into foster care. Despite the clear abuse, Children's Aid just wanted to remove the children from the commune, not press any charges. This meant that the cult carried on, with just 2 men and 8 women. The removal of the children made Rock incredibly angry, which made him more violent. When Rock was intoxicated, he liked to play doctor with his followers. One day, he became enraged at Claude Ouellette. No one knew why. Claude's punishment was to walk around with an elastic band wrapped around his scrotum. Claude kept the band on overnight, which caused tremendous damage to his testicles. So Rock got to play doctor again. He grabbed a razor blade and opened Claude's scrotum, removing the infected testicle with his hands. He then cauterized the wound with a burning hot iron. Rock continued to target Claude and tried to have the group vote on whether they should stone Claude to death. Fortunately for Claude, the group voted against it. Rock's response to this was to threaten to cut Claude's stomach open. Claude, noticing Rock's escalating violent behavior, escaped to the woods where he would wait for Rock to calm down and sober up. This became a common tactic of all the members to avoid Rock's wrath. One night, Rock threw a knife at Giselle, which struck her thigh. The wound bled profusely, but Rock offered no help to his wife and told her to go to sleep. After 2 hours, a large scab had formed on Giselle's swollen leg. Rock seized the opportunity to operate. Giselle was made to lie down on the kitchen table, where he reopened the wound and poured hot water over it. Later, when the wound became infected, Rock rubbed in salt and olive oil to cure the infection. Miraculously, Giselle's leg healed. As soon as she recovered, she tried to escape and went to stay with her father for a couple of days. But she was under Rock's spell, and before long she returned to the commune. In September of 1988, Solange fell ill. Rock told her something was wrong with her liver and that he needed to operate. One day he got drunker than usual and decided it was time for Solange's treatment. He led her to the kitchen and made her strip naked and lie down on a table. Rock then attempted to give Solange an enema with a plastic tube, trying to fill her up with molasses, oil, and water. After this, He punched Solange in the stomach repeatedly. As a reflex, she put her hands up in defense, but when Rock told her to put them down, she complied. Next up, he placed a tube down her throat and made everyone in the group blow into it. All of this was only preparation for the surgical procedure. Everyone looked on as Rock made a large incision on Solange's side, just below her ribs. He placed his hand inside her, rummaged around her intestines, and eventually pulled out a piece of tissue. Confident that he had healed her, he said, "There, you're going to be all right." Rock ordered one of the others to sew her up, after which he made Solange get back off the table. She was unsteady on her feet, and he told her to have a hot bath, then a cold one, then a hot one again. However, nothing made Solange feel better. She went to lie down, and before long, blood was pouring out of her mouth, and she died. Doctors would later say this was due to digestive fluids having leaked into her abdominal cavity. After the death of Solange, Rock was in a state of depression. He tried to end his life by drowning, overdosing on Tylenol, and he even asked Jacques to shoot him. But Rock survived all the suicide attempts. His mental health also deteriorated, and over time, he became convinced that he was pregnant with Solange. A week after her passing, Rock had a revelation. He would resurrect Solange. He ordered Claude to exhume her body. Gabrielle was tasked with opening her up and pouring vinegar inside her body to preserve her organs. Solange was returned to her grave, only to be dug up a second time when Rock deemed it was time for her resurrection. Solange's body was laid out on the kitchen table. Jacques was ordered to drill a hole into her skull. Rock proceeded to ejaculate into the opening. He encouraged the other men to do the same. According to this ill-conceived master plan, Rock believed that the semen would bring Solange back to life. Unsurprisingly, she remained dead. Rock was distraught and his followers decided it would be best to burn her remains. Before they could do so, Rock removed one of her ribs. From that day forward, he wore it in a leather pouch around his neck. In the Genesis, God created Eve by taking her from the rib of Adam. Perhaps this biblical gesture was Rock's last-ditch effort to one day revive Solange once more. 2 months after Solange's death, another member had a health concern. Gabrielle Lavallee complained about a sore tooth. Rock's answer to her problem was ripping out 8 of her teeth with pliers. That wasn't all Rock had in store for Gabrielle, though. Later that evening, he chased Gabrielle around with a knife and managed to cut one of the tendons in her hand. Still, Gabrielle remained loyal to her tormentor. Over the years, she had suffered horrific abuse from the hands of Rock, including a blowtorch held to her genitals and a hypodermic needle being placed in her spine, which broke off while still inserted. Gabrielle had tried to leave the cult on previous occasions, but returned after she was unable to live without them. In July 1989, Gabrielle complained that her hand was stiff. Rock then pinned her hand to the kitchen table with a knife and decided to amputate her arm. Some reports say he used a meat cleaver, others say he used a hunting knife. But regardless of what instrument he used, Rock began hacking away at Gabrielle's arm until it was amputated. He then left her lying on the kitchen floor in unimaginable pain until the following morning when the remaining stump was stitched up. And still Gabrielle stayed. On August 16th, Gabrielle managed to get off of the property and made her way to the closest hospital. She tried to make up an excuse for the fact that she had an arm missing, but the hospital called the police, realizing something was seriously wrong. When the police showed up on Rock's doorstep 3 days later, there was no one around. The compound had been deserted. 3 members fled with Rock, while others went back to their families, finally having had enough. Police searched for Rock for 6 weeks before discovering him at a hideout in Quebec. Charges were also laid against other members of the cult for Gabrielle's amputation, which they all pleaded guilty to. For this act of sadism, Rock was handed 12 years in prison. Rock was also charged with first-degree murder of Solange Boillard. The judge believed there wasn't enough evidence that the murder was premeditated, so instead, Rock was tried for second-degree murder. In the end, the former cult leader made a deal to ensure more leniency. He pleaded guilty, and no additional charges were brought against him. On January 18, 1993, Roch Thériault was sentenced to life in prison. His reign of terror was finally over, yet some of his wives remained loyal to him, and he impregnated them during conjugal visits, giving him 4 more children. The fierce cult leader never completed his sentence, however. In 2011, the 63-year-old Roch Thériault was fatally stabbed by a fellow inmate. An unceremonious death for someone who believed he was a vessel of God and manipulated people to do the unthinkable. He is no longer alive, but the damage he did will remain as his disillusioned followers raise his children and try to nurse the emotional and physical scars left by a monstrous sadist. If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Visit us on social media to see more about today's case. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our channel on YouTube. If you like what we do here at Evidence Locker, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening right now, and kindly leave a 5-star review. This was the Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.